And we're back with What's Ailing America. I would like to thank the last caller that called in. I do really appreciate it when people post links to the shows that I do as well as my information on their Facebook pages and websites and such. It's so important to get out this information. As I'm watching the children around the world, but especially here in America, be destroyed, it just it causes pain that is indescribable. Children are so innocent, and what's being done to them is straight from hell. And we all need to do whatever we can do to try to stop it. And in regards to justice delayed, I just want to bring up one other email that I received, very important, in regards to the Columbine shooters. As it turns out, the young men that decided to go postal and start shooting people at Columbine, they were also sexually assaulted. And this is coming out now. The information that I received, it says here, please review our website, Google Columbine Family Request. What is most disturbing is the depth of the cover-up. We learned that the Columbine shooters had been raped during an arrest months before the tragedy. No one in position of trust will call for an investigation of their concerns. They say that they have documented proof that even President Clinton refused to act upon their report that the shooters were raped and instead protected the pedophile rapist. And then they give a list of all of the aiders and abettors of the cover-up of this situation. So, you see, if you wonder why children are really acting out and doing all kinds of terrible things, just imagine what it's like to be a young person, have something horrible like this happen to you. Nobody will help you. What are you supposed to do? I mean, you can, you know, get some Novocaine for your soul, as I said, you know, drugs, alcohol, whatever. Psychiatric drugs, trying to numb the pain, or you can act out. And this was pretty amazing to me when I received this information that, in fact, child abuse was actually perpetrated on these young people that became the Columbine shooters. And, of course, you know, we all heard that the shooters were on psychiatric drugs. And, of course, psychiatric drugs have a side effect of homicide as well. So once you start to understand what's going on, or I should say overstand, I don't like that word, understand. Once you overstand the patterns and practices of these predators and how they're creating these situations for many reasons to cause trauma so that they can be psychic vampires and feed off the adrenochrome that's created by the trauma and the horror of the people who have a conscience as these things unfold. But also, you know, there's always many layers of agendas here. You know, basically you start talking about, you know, gun control, and we also saw how Michael Moore moved in, another minion, Bowling for Columbine. You know, there's so many things. They always get many different objectives fulfilled with these different things that they are behind. And so, you know, that's just another thing you need to know. And just one other thing I wanted to mention in regards to the protection of the sex offenders. Of course, the ones who are actually convicted, in almost all cases, you can be sure that they're not high-level Masons. I mean, I still don't know how the Jerry Sandusky story even came out to begin with. Occasionally, a miracle does occur where some of these things come out. And as I said, we now have Louis Free in the background making sure that the other pedophiles that were using the children from the Second Mile organization aren't exposed, because then people would know, oh, this is a very big problem, and then, you know, the Franklin cover-up might come out, and, you know, the layers of awareness would start to increase. And, in fact, we even had a conviction of some Catholic priests yesterday on one count of covering up child sex abuse. So it's starting to happen a little bit, but not to the degree that it needs to. But at the same time, we have an article from CharlotteObserver.com on May 31st, 2012, page 3A, Sex Offenders Fight to Use Facebook. plaintiffs in lawsuit claims rules violate their rights to free speech. And as it turns out, you know, the sex offenders, you know, they're supposed to basically put on their social media sites like Facebook that they are convicted sex offenders and things of that nature. And they don't want to do that. And actually, there have been provisions made for these offenders that they're not supposed to join social networks or chat rooms or use instant messaging programs. But after hearing challenges, federal judges in two states threw out laws or parts of the laws that they deemed too stringent. In Nebraska, home of the Franklin cover-up, by the way, the decision allowed sex offenders to join social networks. And in Louisiana, a new law lets offenders use the internet for shopping, reading news, and exchanging email. A case filed against Indiana's law is under review. So we have further another minion saying, a professor of constitutional law at the City University of New York, Ruthen Robson, said that the bans could eventually be taken up by the Supreme Court if the justices decide there's a constitutional question. If we think that the government can curtail sex offenders' rights without any connection to the actual crime, then it could become a blanket prohibition against anyone who's accused of a crime, no matter what the crime is. So basically, here we have an article that's pretty much telling us these poor sex offenders, just because they've been found guilty of harming children does not mean that they should not be able to set up their next victim, you see, because you can't prosecute them until they've actually hurt a child. So this is another one of those amazing constitutional questions, you know, as all of our rights and, you know, liberties and ability to decide what we want to eat, what we want to, you know, take as supplements, all these kinds of things are being attacked. We now have word that the Supreme Court may be taking up the question of whether the constitutional rights of the sex offenders is being violated. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Okay. I want to just get to some slightly good news that I received. I appreciate all of the information that so many of my clients and listeners send me, because there's no way I could keep up with all this stuff without your help. And I received, let's see, an article from Mail Online on June 15th, and that website is dailymail.co.uk. The title of the article is MMR, A Mother's Victory. The vast majority of doctors say there's no link between the triple jab and autism, but could an Italian court case reignite this controversial debate? And as it turns out, there's been a landmark ruling in an Italian court in regards to a child by the name of Valentino Bocca, whose autism was found to be provoked by the MMR jab he received at age 9 months. His parents have already been awarded 140,000 euros and could be paid an additional 800,000 euros in their case against the Italian government. Now, of course, there's no amount of money that can compensate parents for having their child damaged in this way. But this is amazing that an Italian court has made this decision. And, of course, we've never heard about this in any of the United States mainstream media, because they certainly don't want this little factoid getting out there. But I'm putting the word out. I don't have time to research how I could reach these parents. But, in fact, my protocol has reversed over 4,000 cases of autism, and I would really love to find a way to connect with these parents, so that I could tell them what I would do if I was they in regards to how to reverse this child's autistic situation. Because now that they've gotten some attention, then perhaps once their child has the results that all the children that do my protocol have, as long as the parents are willing to do what they have to do, they would help get the word out that there is help for these children, because none of the autism groups in this country, like Generation Rescue, Autism Speaks, Autism One, they all know that there's a way to help these children. But, of course, they will not, you know, mention my work, and especially they will not mention what I teach the people that I talk to on all the shows that I do, is that vaccines are bioweapons. They will not go to that layer. So if any of you have some time, if you want to go to dailymail.co.uk and check out this article, MMR, A Mother's Victory, and possibly help me find a way to track down these people so that I can tell them what I would do if I was they. And see, this will also give further proof that, in fact, the autism was caused by the measles virus, because what I do is teach them how to detoxify it. Unfortunately, once you've had a virus injected into your bloodstream, colloidal silver is not going to be able to take care of it because it gets right into your DNA. Homeopathy is the way to go. Okay, there's that music again. We'll be right back after these messages. We're back with What's Ailing America, where I'm covering a number of issues today that are in the news. And the next thing I want to bring up is a very important situation going on in British Columbia, fish plague cover-up. And this was reported by Don Meister in the Star Phoenix on June 6, 2012. And basically what this article is exposing is that British Columbia salmon farms have suddenly been hit with a virus, infectious hemopoietic necrosis. It would be within reason to call it marine Ebola. It's a very strong candidate for truly apocalyptic events in the oceans, the stuff movies are made of. The virus is nearly 100% fatal in fish, especially young fish, and is essentially untreatable. At least one major salmon producer is dumping its dead fish in an area near Port Alberni that until then was probably free of this virus. The BC legislature's response? It is hurriedly preparing to table legislation that will make it illegal to report on the progress of the disease, with draconian penalties for any reporting and no access through freedom of information. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. So they're doing nothing to stop the dumping of the fish who have died of this marine Ebola in areas that do not have it, which of course means it's going to spread. Instead, they're hurriedly preparing legislation that will make it illegal to report on the situation. Okay? So all of our governments in the quote-unquote Western world are filled with psychopaths. They are not only doing nothing to protect us, they're doing everything possible to keep the truth from us. And of course, where did this emerging virus come from? We can be sure it came from a biowarfare laboratory someplace. These things do not just happen naturally in nature, people, as I'm sure you all know. Okay, I have another article here from CharlotteObserver.com, which I just happen to get every day. It's the paper from the largest city near where I live here in North Carolina. So I can see what they're telling the sheep. And, of course, they have many articles in this paper from different other papers. This particular article is from the Washington Post. FCC considers cell phone race study. The Federal Communications Commission is seeking to study whether it needs better guidelines to protect people from cell phone radiation, a question it hasn't posed in 15 years. But before the FCC can even examine the question, the agency must get permission from its five commissioners. They are confident that it set the emissions guidelines for devices pose no risk to consumers, a FCC spokeswoman said in a statement. The agency said it was uncertain when a vote would take place. Although a separate February 2011 study by researchers at the NIH found that 50 minutes of cell phone use altered activity in the part of the brain closest to where the device antennas were located. The wireless industry said it welcomes an initial inquiry of radiation limits, saying it is confident the FCC will find no changes need to be made. And why are they so confident? Because the FCC is in their back pocket, of course, and the idea that they have to get permission to study this is ridiculous. Now, of course, let's pretend that there were some scientists that work for these different governmental agencies who were not on the take and who were basically willing to use statistics and all the other techniques they have to come out with fraudulent research saying things are safe. Let's pretend that there are some that are not of that ilk. Let's say that they did a study and they certainly found, as anybody with common sense knows, that in fact radiation from cell phones does damage the brain. In fact, I've come across many people over the years that have actually gotten brain tumors right where they hold their cell phone. But you know how they always just pretend, well, you can't be sure, we just can't prove it. What will they probably do? Well, we can look at what they're doing in British Columbia. They can come up with legislation that makes it illegal to report it to the people. You know, these are the kinds of things going on. And this is such insanity. I know that, you know, you're all aware of these things and I'm preaching to the choir, but it's just so frustrating to me how all these things can be going on. And yet so many people are out there going to the mall, going to the movies, having their little get-togethers and their barbecues and pretending that none of this is happening. It's just mind-boggling. And that's why I appreciate all of you who are trying to wake up others. And I know it's hard, because we have this little problem that people with a conscience can't even conceive of evil of the degree that we're being exposed to. But, you know, we have to grow up and develop a backbone and do whatever we're led to do. You don't have to get your own show and get on a soapbox like I do. Just try to wake up as many people as you can. And that is happening. So that is good news. But it's not happening fast enough for me. Patience is not my best virtue. Okay, I have another amazing article I was sent that was published in ScienceDirect.com. It is an article entitled Immunization and Bacterial Pathogens in the Oropharynx as Risk Factors for Alopecia Areata, which is a type of baldness. Now, this is an amazing article because they actually admit in this article, published Volume 101, Issue 5, 2010, pages 437 to 443 in Actus Demo, the English edition that you can find on ScienceDirect.com, that in fact a history of immunization and also being a carrier of this particular type of strep in your oropharynx were risk factors for alopecia. Now, of course, the question I would ask is, did any of these people that had strep pyogenes in their oropharynx, were any of them not vaccinated? I can't imagine that any of them were not vaccinated. So I think that this strep bacteria that they threw into here is just like a red herring to make it look like this could cause this baldness problem as well. But in fact, I figured out many years ago that autoimmune attacks on the follicles from which the hair grow are also a problem from vaccinations, because I've had many people that were going bald who actually were helped greatly with my protocol. If the follicle's dead, you can't necessarily bring it back, but certainly you can stop the progression of the problem. So I'm always amazed when I come across these articles, which people send me. There's lots of you out there doing research, and I really appreciate it. It's very helpful that, in fact, vaccines cause baldness. And so, you know, we do have some actual researchers out there with a conscience doing work such as this. Of course, isn't it sad how none of this information is ever shared with the public? You have to go out looking for it yourself and finding these things. Until I get a chance to get my vaccine book done, which will happen after I get my How Did the Hippocratic Oath Become the Hypocritic book done, which just never seems to get done because there's so many sidebar issues going on at this point. And one of the new sidebar issues for me, which I'm very glad to participate in, is Wendy Wilson, thepowerherbs.com. I'm on her show twice a month since Bob Chapman died of very strange causes. She used to be in his newsletter with a health column, but now that he's no longer with us, she has taken the, you know, the action of starting her own newsletter, which has a few people in it, including myself, writing on medical issues, and she's also got somebody writing on economic issues. And this is going to be a weekly newsletter, and it's free. And you can find that by going to Wendy Wilson's website, thepowerherbs.com, and check that out. So there's lots of things going on that takes up my time and prevents me from getting other things done. There's just not enough hours in the day. But that's why I so appreciate those of you who are sending me information to help with my research as to the big picture of what the psychopaths are up to. Because one of the problems that we obviously have is that many people who are interested in researching one particular area, that's all they're researching. They don't know how all of the other things that are being done are actually combining in the big picture to cause the hell in which we live. And it's a very difficult task to kind of try to keep up with all these things. And that is a problem. But it's not just one thing. And if you have a particular issue that you're concerned with, that's great. But just please try to tell people that there's others that are looking at the big picture. Myself and Deanna Spingola being two one of the main people along those lines. Because we have to see the big picture. That's the only way that we're going to actually get the strength to realize we live in hell, and if we don't do anything, it's going to only get worse. And one other thing I just want to bring up in regards to that cell phone study, it was truly amazing to me, although it's hard to shock me these days, but that the FCC has been allowing, you know, young people to use cell phones for 15 years without even considering, well, should we see if this is safe? Now, of course, this brings to mind, it's the same thing with the vaccine situation. You know, when they created the bird flu, swine flu monster, you know, they come up with a vaccine right away. Interesting how obviously that was pretty much ready to go. They created the vaccine while they're creating the actual bug. But you see, there's a term called the precautionary principle. And the precautionary principle is where you're supposed to make something sure something is safe before you unleash it on the population. And in fact, the precautionary principle does not exist. The agencies now have taken the position that they don't have to make sure anything is safe. As a matter of fact, the FDA is another wonderful example of that. Just check out the side effects of any drugs you're taking. If you actually read those side effects, you'd realize this drug is not safe. How can the FDA be allowing this to be released on the population? You see, although that's one situation where they will admit to many side effects. And that's why if you actually check out your side effects, you will never take anything that they're writing a prescription for. But I just want you to realize that this precautionary principle, which is supposed to be commonsensically, you know, the way to go in terms of exposing people to things that are bad, you know, GMO food. There's so many examples to this. Aspartame, you know, it all fits into it. Instead of a precautionary principle, what they do is unleash their horrors upon the public and then use plausible deniability after the damage starts up in order to make people think, well, you can't be sure. You can't be sure the vaccines caused it. You can't be sure anything caused anything because, you see, that's when they bring in the big picture. You know, and this is happening all the time, especially with autism. I actually got an email recently. There's some group that's promoting the fact that our water supplies are being contaminated from psychiatric drugs that people are flushing down the toilet and urinating out of their bodies and things of that nature. And, of course, these things are bad. But is this the cause of autism? Obviously, it's not the cause of autism. Autism has massively skyrocketed since they started injecting the MMR vaccine. Psychiatric drugs have been around for a long time. And as I always say, it's always the big picture. All of these things cause toxicity and cause damage. But instead of actually looking at the most obvious cause of a problem, they have this tendency to use their plausible deniability after they've unleashed their monsters. And that's why I encourage all of you to realize this principle of science, how much it has been corrupted in itself. As I always tell people, the only way that you can be sure if something, whatever it may be, a drug, a toxin, whatever, actually causes a particular situation is if you have two cloned rats that are drinking the same water, eating the same food, breathing the same air, and even getting the same amount of attention and nurturing from their handlers. Because otherwise, there are all kinds of other situations going on in their life that you cannot make a determination on a drug's efficacy, for example. If you have two people, one of them's a vegetarian and the other one's eating at McDonald's every day, or being exposed to stress, or drinking fluoridated water, diet soda, whatever. They never ask these things when they're getting their guinea pigs to study for a particular drug, you know, in their clinical research studies that they're now putting out there. It's amazing how many people actually survive that way. They sign up for these studies. They allow themselves to be poisoned with experimental drugs that they're looking to see what it actually does. And they get paid for, you know, making themselves available as guinea pigs. But they don't, you know, make sure that they're all in the same group in terms of nutrition, stress, pollution where they live. The list is endless, the big picture. But they will come up with their determination after they get rid of some of the people that didn't maybe go the way that they wanted them to go, especially if there's a group of people that have more side effects. They will find an excuse to erase them from the study and things of that nature. So this whole idea of science is a fraud to begin with. It's all about observation. If you do something in a mass amount, if you have cell phone usage in children, vaccines, aspartame. These things are all known to cause cancer. And so, of course, if you have a child that's drinking diet soda, chewing diet gum, and getting vaccinated, of course, they're going to have a much greater risk of getting brain cancer, or any other kind of cancer, actually. So you have to bring common sense into the picture. And unfortunately, that is being erased from society in general, because people will just make some claim, oh, vaccines are safe and effective. They're the best thing since sliced bread in the medical community. They've, you know, gotten rid of all these contagious diseases. No, do your homework, folks. That is the biggest lie that's ever been told in medicine. Okay, I have another article here from the Charlotte Observer from yesterday, Friday, June 22nd, page 8A, debate over fire retardant's toxicity rages. Now, I'm sure you've all heard that we now have a massive situation in Colorado, a fire that's burning out of control. I have a very good friend in Colorado, so whenever this thing happens, I have to call him and make sure that he's not being affected by this situation. But amazingly, what these idiots are doing, they're doing this in many places, they have these controlled burns. Now, this is another situation that's completely insane. You have an area of forest that's dry because you haven't had enough rain, because, you know, they've had the heart machine turned on and they're turning some parts of the country into desert, like especially Texas. And even here in North Carolina, it's been between 90 and 95 for the past week. So they're pretty much frying us. My container gardens are all going to flower, you know, nothing's surviving. But you have a situation where, because of other things you're doing, the weather's being affected. And so you have all of this pretty much kindling out there in the forest just waiting to be ignited. And so what do? They set it on fire on purpose, and they call it controlled burns. Now, that doesn't even make sense. How can you have a controlled burn if you have an entire forest that's very very dry, and the plants are pretty much, as I said, turning to kindling? How could you possibly believe that you could start a fire, and I don't care how many trenches you build or what you do, that you could actually control the burn? But these are the kinds of things that these idiots are up to. And then when the fire gets out of control, well, they bring in the flying fire retardant people. And this is an amazing situation. And actually, this article is specifically involving a fire in Cheyenne, Wyoming. There's fires all over the place. But in this article, they're talking about new U.S. Forest Service rules for the use of fire retardants in dozens of natural forests, which are seeking to prevent millions of gallons of fire retardant spread over the landscape every year from poisoning streams and killing off protected plants and fish. So first they make, you know, some kind of plant or fish or wildlife of any type, quote-unquote, protected, and then they start spraying it with fire retardant after, in many cases, they've actually started the fire on purpose. And this was an interesting article because I had not researched fire retardant too much, except for obviously realizing that it has to be poison. But in this article, they actually talk about what's in the fire retardant. And as it turns out, fire retardant is primarily ammonium phosphate, a fertilizer. And of course, we know that fertilizers are poison. And this is another big problem that we have with these agri-farms that are using different fertilizers, and then the runoff gets into the lakes and streams, and it's also poisoning fish and other wildlife. So isn't it amazing not that these idiots would get an idea of taking ammonium phosphate fertilizer, basically, and spraying it out of planes over areas of national parks that are on fire? But this is, in fact, what's going on. And we have some individuals, you know, this alleged debate. They say debate gets complicated. Who's right? The finer points of the debate get complicated. Fire retardant doesn't attempt to put out wildfires or even necessarily halt flames in their advance. Isn't that amazing? They actually state that it doesn't attempt to put out wildfires or halt flames in their advance. So what does it do? It's formulated to slow down the combustion of trees, brush, and grass. You know, make the fire burn slower. So another reason why it's insane. Because, of course, it's not actually putting the fire out. And their rationalization for this insane practice is that it's supposed to give firefighters time to mount a ground attack. The ground forces clear away flammable material in a wide line around the edges of the fire and then hem in the flames, and eventually a soaking rainfall will happen. So basically, they just set up a line of poison around the perimeter of the fire and then wait for rain. You can't make this stuff up. Okay, folks, there's the music. We'll be back in a moment. And we're back with the last segment of What's Ailing America. I just wanted to finish up on this amazing article about fire retardants toxicity. The debate is raging. Who knows why the debate is raging, because within the article it actually states, we've observed streams for miles be sterilized of all their fish life. Tens of thousands of fish can be killed in one dump. In 2002, a slurry bomber inadvertently dumped between 1,000 and 2,000 gallons of fire retardant on the Fall River about 25 miles south of Bend, Oregon. The retardant immediately killed all of the river's fish, an estimated 21,000, mainly juvenile brown trout, red band trout, and mountain whitefish along a 6-mile stretch. It took years for the fish population to begin to recover. And then they go on to state it did not have long-term impacts to the habitat itself, but it did have immediate impacts to the population. Although they also state that, you know, the fish can be sterilized if not killed. So if they're sterilized, then obviously they're not going to reproduce. So there's only one way the fish population could have began to recover, and that is if they spent even more money, you know, basically stocking the streams, because that's what they do. They destroy things, and then they try to fix it up. And in all areas of this insanity, they spend money and make money. And in fact, it states in this article that the U.S. Forest Service spent $19 million on 23 million gallons of retardant just last year. $19 million for 23 million gallons of retardant. So I guess it's about $1 million for 1 million gallons. And they're spraying this all over nature. Is it any surprise that so much poisoning is happening to our planet? And let's see. There's another statement they make here, which is truly amazing. Only 14 of 128,000 retardant drops over 8 years killed protected fish or plants. And then they go on to state that the ammonia in the ammonium phosphate fire retardant is not a human health risk. Excuse me? How could it not be a human health risk? But, you know, it's just amazing. You know, they come up with these numbers. Oh, just like they say, oh, your chance of your child getting a vaccine reaction is actually very small. And they give their made-up number. How are we to believe that only 14 of 128,000 retardant drops killed protected fish or plants? Because, of course, they're not going to admit if it's worse than this. This is what they do. They cover things up. This is how they operate. And so we're supposed to say, oh, aren't we lucky that it's not worse than it is? But everything they're doing is causing problems, and, of course, we're paying for it. So that is what we have to face, people. And whatever area you're interested in, please start educating yourself. Don't believe me. Check it out for yourself. You can find information on all the subjects I discuss and tell others. And if they don't want to listen to you, they're going to die, especially in regards to health-related issues. And that's unfortunate. As I've said before on the show many times, my own family doesn't listen to me. They're dying one by one. There's nothing I can do, and so I do not waste my time on them. And it's sad, but it's the way it is. If they will not take responsibility for checking things out for themselves, the penalty is death. And it's not pretty, as my younger sister is now finding out as she's dying from chemo and radiation. So this is what we have to realize, and like I said, do the best you can to spread the information and try to get people to check things out for themselves. Because if they check things out for themselves, then it's more likely they will come to their own conclusion. And that's the secret, actually, as I've realized over the years. If you can get people to basically come to their own conclusion that something is true, they're going to be much more likely to accept reality. Because one of the things that comes up all the time is the ego. And especially in regards to clients that I have who have health-related professionals in their families. Doctors are, of course, the worst, but nurses are pretty bad, too, because none of them want to believe that in all their intelligence, how could they possibly have been hoodwinked? How could they possibly have been lied to and not picked it up? And, of course, in medicine, the main way this is done is with sleep deprivation, as I learned, just like it's done in the military. How do you get somebody to do something insane and make them believe they're doing good? Well, you get them so sleep-deprived and nutritionally deprived and pretty much, you know, zombified into an automaton that they can't even think clearly. It's a very effective technique. And the problem is that they don't want to admit that they were lied to and they bought the information as truth when it was a total lie. So they will defend to their death the right to believe that they are correct in regards to all of these different areas. You know, that the courts are just and the doctors are saving lives and all the rest of the crap that we're hearing every day here in the best country in the world. What a joke. And so if the person's ego is so huge that they will not even consider your facts that you can present to them, I have an entire storage depot full of information that I'm hoping to somehow shrink into a book that's not an encyclopedia. But that's what you have to do, is get them to consider the truth. And if they won't do so, then, as I said, they're going to die, and that's just the way it is. And that's it. But then, of course, they're breathing our oxygen. So that's how I look at it. Okay. I just have a little bit more time. There's a couple of other things I want to bring up. One of my favorite cartoons is Non Sequitur, which they do have in the paper that I read every day. And I love this cartoon. It has so much truth in it on a regular basis. But as I was looking through information to talk about on the show today, I just came across a Non Sequitur cartoon from March 8th of 2007 entitled The Political Zoology Field Guide, Today's Specimen, the Couching Tiger, Perpetuus Victimus. And this is what he writes as the identifying characteristics of the couching tiger, which I would call a psychopath. The innocent kitten-like appearance is the most effective camouflage for this malevolent ambush predator. It has the uncanny ability to avoid scrutiny and aggressively hunt its prey by couching every situation to appear that the tiger is the victim. It will continue playing the victim role while devouring its prey. And the habitat is deep inside the partisan jungle, and the natural enemy is harsh daylight. And as I'm, you know, got CNN on in the background, seeing what's being told to the sheep, which I watch the little streamers going across the bottom during the commercials, amazingly, we're already hearing Sandusky's plan for an appeal. And guess what the basis of the appeal is? Because the evidence was so overwhelming that these jurors only took a few days to come up with a guilty verdict, and they had to consider 48 charges against this man. So what is the strategy for the appeal of this ambush predator who's basically, you know, pretending that he's the victim? Well, they're saying that his attorneys did not have enough time to prepare the case. They didn't have enough time to prepare the case because, you see, he had done so many heinous crimes to these children that, you know, they just didn't have enough time to come up with a spin to explain each one of them. So that's what they're talking about on CNN. That's their plan. They're going to, you know, start an appeal for this monster. And, of course, the people of Pennsylvania, the taxpayers, will have to pay for that as well. And this is how the legal system works. And I would not be a bit surprised if down the road he's quietly found to be not guilty or his constitutional rights were violated or whatever, because that's how the justice system works. Actually, that's why they call it the criminal justice system, because it is criminal. Okay. And another little thing I just want to mention, it's very, very handy for me, is a two-pager, an article that was written by Voltaire Cousteau. You know, the Cousteaus are the ones that are involved with different things going on with the ocean. And as it turns out, the Cousteaus have a very dark side as well, which I don't have time to get into. But Voltaire Cousteau had actually written this primer, How to Swim with Sharks. And I've sent this to many people, and I renamed it How to Swim with Land Sharks. In other words, the psychopathic predators. And it actually is very helpful. So let me just get into some of these things before the end of the show. Nobody wants to swim with sharks. It is not an acknowledged sport, and it is neither enjoyable nor exhilarating. These instructions are written primarily for the benefit of those who, by virtue of their occupation, find they must swim and find that the water is infested with sharks. Assume unidentified fish are sharks. Do not flee. Counter any aggression promptly. Get out if someone is bleeding. Use anticipatory retaliation. Disorganize an organized attack. The proper strategy is diversion. Okay, folks, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week, and as I said, tomorrow on my Sunday show.
At OrionTalkRadio.com, you could say that we're all talk.
Later proves to be connected to drug smuggling. And